Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of July 2nd, 2019. And this is officially episode number 398. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And today, today's a big day. I alluded to this last week on last week's show. I kind of considered that the day after World UFO Day, but today, seemingly to everybody else in the world, to the media especially, today is officially World UFO Day. And if you didn't know that, you probably haven't been paying attention to the news. It's all over the place. People tweeting about it. There's literally hundreds of stories about where to find UFOs in different states and what states have the most UFO sightings and all this and that. It's World UFO Day. So we're going to celebrate that today. Talking about what else? UFO stories. It's really crazy. I mean, the world has just gone UFO crazy. I don't know if it's because it's UFO Day today or people were talking about World UFO Day last week with the Kenneth Arnold sighting, the 72nd anniversary of that, or what's going on. But now we're looking at the 72nd anniversary of the Roswell incident. So a lot of people talking about UFOs. Granted, it's already been in the news, and a few more stories hitting the news wire over the last few days. And even today, got a couple of stories I probably am not going to have time to cram in here. I haven't had time to really read all the way through them. More stuff coming out about UFOs, aliens, and all kinds of stuff. This is definitely the year of UFOs. And to think that last year, my top 10 paranormal news countdown, I was just thinking about this before the show, I only had, I think, one story in the top 10, and it was about the pilots, the multiple pilots in different areas seeing and reporting UFOs last year. And now this year, I don't know, that top 10 is going to be just chock full of UFO stories, I think. And I predicted a Loch Ness Monster story would take number one, but I don't think that's going to happen unless it's unless they actually fish it out of the lock, which I don't think is going to happen. But lots of news tonight, and yes, happy World UFO Day part two. And we're also going to be talking about, I just mentioned him, the Loch Ness Monster. Well, he's on vacation, or I guess holiday. He's on holiday checking out some baseball in London. I'm going to talk 13 reasons why aliens might be real. We're also going to talk about Breakthrough Listen, as they've released some data they've collected. UFO nearly causes an international incident in Korea. I don't know if you heard about this. This is a mainstream news story, which I was kind of shocked to read this. But MUFON. Mentioned by a pretty prestigious organization. Talk about that story. And we'll also talk MUFON sighting statistics for the month of June, now that we're officially in July. And A&E, the A&E Network TV, they're going to resurrect, no pun intended, some old ghost shows, and they're going to produce new ones. So if you're a big ghost hunting TV show person and you haven't heard this, you're in for some good news tonight. We're also going to talk about that, some really weird weather down in Mexico. We don't normally talk about the weather here unless we're kind of leading off the show, like we've got storms in the area and maybe we're going to get hit by lightning. My microphone's going to glow in the daylight. I usually let you know, maybe we'll lose signal, but I dodged one today. About an hour and a half ago, we had a massive thunderstorm just past the south here. And temperatures here, about 85 degrees. Partly cloudy. Well, partly sunny, I guess. Mostly cloudy. That's how the weathermen say it. And, no, unfortunately, I wish Well, I don't know if I wish. I think it's had its time, it had its day. I would like to see them finish the X-Files, but I don't think the X-Files is coming back, at least not with Gillian Anderson anyway. Anyway, we're going to jump into the news. And, well, actually, you know, real quick note here. Yes, today is World UFO Day, but I should mention, since we're talking about holidays, that yesterday was Canada Day. So happy belated Canada Day to everybody up there. I guess you're up there. You're up there to me because looking at the map. Anyway, you guys probably hear that. But great country up there. I haven't been to Canada in a couple of years, a year, 2 years. I forget. Anyway, happy belated Canada Day. And let's jump into, cryptid news. Let's get the cryptid stuff out of the way and kind of keeping a close eye on my friends here, Cleveland Indians, to see if they can bounce back. They had a horrible series against Baltimore over the weekend, dropping 13-0, two straight games, 13. That's just embarrassing. No offense to anybody in Baltimore, but y'all got a bad baseball team. But some of the other teams there in the American League East are pretty darn good. I mean, if you haven't guessed, I'm a pretty big baseball fan. And over the weekend, my two least favorite teams in all of Major League Baseball battled it out in London, England in a two-game series. Now, the home team for the series was the Boston Red Sox, which is kind of weird to say that. The Boston Red Sox were at home in London. And unfortunately, for them, they lost both games to the New York Yankees. Now, if I'm watching a Boston and New York game, which somebody's probably got me zip tied to a chair and forced me to, otherwise I wouldn't be watching, I'm probably going to root for Boston. Boston. Not a big Yankees fan at all, even though Boston's broke my heart a few times beating the Indians. But anyway, the Yankees scored 29 runs in two games. But then again, Boston scored 21. They couldn't even come out with a win. Couldn't even split that series. But Major League Baseball, they're trying to market baseball to the world. And I think they did a pretty darn good job with the series. If you watched it over the weekend, it was all over the news. Lots of pictures and beautiful clubhouse. Love to have that clubhouse. One of the lesser known happenings, however, during the game was a little event called the mascot race. Now, if you've never seen this, here in the United States, quite a few teams have a mascot race, such as the sausage race in Milwaukee. So a bunch of people dress up in costumes that look like sausages, and they race each other for nothing. It's for excitement. People watch, and they hope for the best. They hope for their particular favorite sausage, hot dog, kielbasa, whatever it is, and they root for it. It doesn't matter who wins. There's no prizes. There's no standings. It's just, I don't know, it's an excitement thing for people. Here in Cleveland, we also have a hot dog race. I don't know why, but they have ketchup and mustard and onion running. You don't put those on a hot dog. Gross. Also in Washington, the Washington Nationals, they have the president's race, where it's a bunch of very large-headed ex-presidents running around on the field to see who can win. Kind of a weird thing, but the London series over the weekend, well, they pulled out some interesting characters of their own. I was really shocked. I hadn't heard too much about it. I knew they were going to have a mascot race, but I didn't know who was in this mascot race until they were talking about it Friday. And I didn't get to see it on Saturday. I don't know what I was doing. But Saturday, the winner was Freddie Mercury. And you're like, okay, so we're 10 minutes into a paranormal news show, and you're talking about baseball. What's the deal? Freddie Mercury? Okay. What's the catch here? Well, he took on Henry VIII, Winston Churchill, and the Loch Ness Monster, which is not even from England. He's from Scotland. So while Freddie, you know, Freddie Mercury's used to saying he was a champion. I think he sang that song, right? Yeah, Queen. His reign only lasted a day. So he won Saturday's race. And while Mercury pulled out to an early lead on Sunday's mascot race, Henry VIII eventually overtook him in the end. No word on where the Loch Ness Monster finished, but apparently he was as elusive here as he was in his hometown of Scotland. And all of the participants got to keep their heads even after Henry VIII won. So no word on, I don't even know where the Loch Ness Monster, I think he finished dead last twice, probably the long neck. Now, maybe he's not used to running around on land. I'm not sure. But sadly, the Loch Ness Monster could not pull it out. But glad to see old Freddie Mercury get a victory. And we'll see. I don't know if they're going to go back. I hear that I think it's the Cubs and somebody else are going, I think, next year. So we'll see if they continue the mascot race. And maybe, just maybe, the Loch Ness Monster can pull one out. Hopefully they have the same mascots. We'll see. We'll see. So now let's move into UFO news. And an article that I kind of alluded to last week, I didn't really have time to get into it because it's an extremely, extremely long article. I think it took me a half hour to read this thing. Seriously, it's very lengthy in this day and age of quick reads where they tell you, oh, this is a three-minute read. And people are like, I don't have time for that. Put it on Twitter. New York Magazine published a really interesting and, again, really long article about UFOs and some of the latest information to surface. It's a lot to digest, but I'll go through a little bit of it. So before I do, question in the chat room. Has anyone ever asked why the Loch Ness Monster can't walk ashore? Well, interestingly enough, if you go back into the 1930s, 1940s, there was the popular belief that the Loch Ness Monster was a land animal. It also lived in the loch but came ashore. People said that they saw it crossing the road when they were driving. And there's even prints, supposed prints of the Loch Ness Monster walking along the muddy shoreline that had turned up. Unfortunately, they had forensics back then to an extent. In the 1940s, they were able to discern that the prints were not from a strange alien or a strange monster of the deep, but of a hippopotamus, but not a regular living hippopotamus, of a stuffed hippopotamus variety. And strangely enough, we don't really hear about the Loch Ness Monster walking around anymore. But you go back to the 1930s, and people did report seeing the Loch Ness Monster walking around. But again, you don't hear about that. All you see is like things look like waves out there or logs bobbing in the water, which is pretty much what it probably is. All right, back to the UFO article written by New York Magazine. The title is 13 Reasons to Believe Aliens Are Real. And it opens with some insights into the history and cultural effects of UFOs and alien life. The first of the 13 reasons starts with the latest bombshell, the fact that the government literally just admitted it's taking UFOs seriously. That's a big deal. The confirmed existence of the Advanced Aerospace Threat and Identification Program, created in 2007 and funded with $22 million from the Department of Defense's budget, it was a pretty big eye-opener for many about the potential for UFOs as well as alien life potentially having an interest here on Earth. The money and the fancy name are one thing, but the fact that videos of genuine sightings from the U.S. military aircraft have accompanied this story, which takes it to a whole new level. No longer is it just speculation. It's reality, and we got the videos to prove it. The second point is that Harry Reid says we're not taking them seriously enough. The former Senate Majority Leader states his interest grew from information obtained from Bob Bigelow, who, of course, we've talked about before, was the owner of the Skinwalker Ranch, home to a lot of UFO sightings. The third point was that scientists are suddenly much more bullish about the possibility of life out there. In just the last decade, we've discovered thousands of potential life-bearing planets, and we're beginning to understand planets and moons in our own solar system a lot better. And scientists are now thinking that life isn't as remote of a possibility as they once did. I mean, we're talking about water on close planets, on close moons to us. That would be great until they start bottling it and charging you $50 a bottle. The third point goes kind of into the fourth point here, where says they're especially bullish about these planets. These planets meaning some of the more likely or recent candidates for harboring life-bearing planets, such as Proxima B, the TRAPPIST-1 system, which has three planets in what's referred to as the Goldilocks zone. If you're not familiar with that, the Goldilocks zone is basically where planets go around a star, where they're not too close or not too far away, so they're not too cold. Or I should put it the other way around. They're not too hot or not too cold, just like the porridge. So water can form and stay in liquid form and not boil away, or the planet's surface just be fire, so that life can find a way, as they say in Jurassic Park. If you have liquid water, you're bound to hopefully have life. The fifth point is that there are people who have experienced abductions or visitations, and many of them have documented their experiences through drawings and stories. But, you know, I wonder, could these have any bearing on discovering aliens? These are just stories so far. The sixth point essentially states that scientists are getting into the game by suggesting potential alien ships could be the cause of some of their readings while searching for exoplanets. Then we also have the Oumuamua asteroid, which stirred up a lot of interest, but was seemingly just a tumbling asteroid of an odd shape. It's making the rounds again in the news. I don't know why. People are talking about this again, the Oumuamua asteroid. It's just a rock, folks. Yes, it was shaped kind of funny, but we didn't really get a picture of it, per se. We got kind of images. Most of the stuff that we saw were drawings that people created from some readings that they figured it's a kind of a long, elongated object. And also mentioned fast radio bursts, which was a kind of a buzzword there for a little while, which have been observed since 2007 and are not quite fully understood as of yet how such a powerful signal is made, but they're pretty much sure it's not aliens. Could be aliens. It's not aliens. The seventh point circles back to some of the people interested in finding answers, such as Robert Bigelow, Bob Bigelow, who we mentioned, who owns Bigelow Aerospace and has been in the center of many of these latest stories. Of course, we also have Elon Musk, the crazy guy who launched his car into outer space, owner of SpaceX, who is hell-bent on creating affordable space travel. I can't wait to sign up for that. What if my camera will work in space, though? That's my only question. Paul Allen, who gave millions of dollars to SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which is basically shooting out signals into outer space. Sorry, that's the other way around. They're searching for signals shot into outer space. I'm thinking of METI, the opposite. So Paul Allen gave millions of dollars to SETI when NASA cut off funding due to their budget being cut years ago by the federal government. Then we also have Yuri Milner, who announced the plan to send ships to Saturn. It's pretty cool, to look for alien life, and is also funding the Breakthrough Listen program, as well as the Breakthrough Starshot program, which will begin. It's probably going to be heating up pretty soon. People start talking about this in the next few years at least, which plans with that include sending small probes out to Alpha Centauri over 4 light years away, and hopefully they'll get there in just over 20 years travel time. Good luck with that. That's awful fast. Over 100 million miles an hour, I think. That's awful fast to get those that they're that fast. Yeah. Now, the eighth point mentions some government officials, mostly former government officials around the world, who are also interested in UFOs and aliens, such as Nick Pope, Barry Goldwater, Dennis Kucinich, John Podesta, and a whole lot more. Now we're going to get into the ninth, which mentions Stephen Wolfram. So Stephen Wolfram is a scientist, and he contributed to the movie Arrival. You've seen that one where they try to create a language to talk to a UFO. It's a weird movie, but it's kind of good. It's kind of good. It's kind of all right. It's better than Contact, I think. That movie was kind of wacky. So he contributed to the movie Arrival. He feels he's actually created a language through computers that could potentially be understood by aliens. Just a bunch of ones and zeros, I guess. I don't know. The 10th point is there have been enough well-known encounters to fill encyclopedias. This entry, however, wasn't really impressed with this. It sounds impressive, but there's a lot of encounters there that are listed that are actually known hoaxes. And then you have the WOW signal from 1977, which they're not sure where it came from. And Professor Antonio Paris thinks it came from a pair of comets. But not everybody believes that one either. But we don't know where it came from. Can't really say it's from aliens. Was it aliens? It's definitely aliens. It also mentions the Phoenix Lights, the Kecksburg crash, and Kenneth Arnold's sighting, and more. The 11th thing, a reason why we should be believing in all this stuff, to me is the weakest of all of the entries. It says sightings are continuing, and they show some sightings, but really and truly, the evidence shown in the article, they're either hoaxed or misinterpreted UFO sightings, and most of those are broadcast from YouTube channels, and some of those YouTube channels are known hoaxers, unfortunately. The 12th entry is we have even some pretty developed theories about why we haven't heard from ET yet, and I think this is pretty much the one of the more interesting things, because it talks about, you know, where we're going to get these signals from if these people, can I call them people, extraterrestrials? If they're still alive, they're still around. What's going on? Why do we not have a signal, or why have we not had a signal yet? Well, the first theory as to why we have not had a signal yet: aliens are all dead. That's promising. Maybe another advanced alien culture was like us millions of, or even billions of years ago, but they died off. You know, or by the time our signals reach their planet, they died off. Because our signals are they're running pretty slow compared to the speed of light. Or maybe the aliens are hibernating or not making use of their technology. Maybe they're kind of smart and they're hiding. They don't want these pesky Earthlings to come to their planet and take over, because they saw the movies, all the Marvel movies, or all these other movies where people invade and take over. It's possible they are hiding from other potential races because they're afraid of that, being taken over by a hostile invasion. Pretty smart, I'd say so. It's also possible maybe they're still evolving and they have not discovered technology to communicate, or maybe even arms and legs for that matter. Maybe they're still floating around in the oceans as single-celled organisms, so they can't even give us the thumbs up. It's also possible that humans have not spent enough time looking. You know, we've only been doing this for about 50 years. That's not a whole lot of time, considering most signals we sent out have yet to reach their mark. You know, we've shot some signals directly towards stars, and some of the earliest stuff that we sent out, they kind of misinterpreted. So it's actually, by the time it gets to these stars, the stars are going to be actually long gone. So our signals are just getting dumped into outer space. So, oops on our part for not doing our research. Then, of course, we have a very popular theory, or I guess you'd say hypothesis, is that they're already here. And they've yet to reveal themselves to everyone, maybe just a select few people. But not everybody yet. So we get to the 13th and last point. It's probably the longest story I've ever done in my life. Is basically a conversation with Joseph Baker, the author of Paranormal America, where our perception of what aliens are is discussed. You'd have to read it. I'm not going to paraphrase that. But like I said, it's quite the read. But there is a lot of decent information in this article. And fear not, if you're a reader, if you want to read this book of an article, you can. You're gonna have to hold out. You could search for it. You can Google it, I'm sure. But I'll be putting. That'll probably be my first link. Starting tomorrow, I'll be publishing the show tonight. So tomorrow I'll start putting links out via Facebook. You can find that at facebook.com/ParaNewsInsider. That's also connected to my Twitter page. I almost said MySpace. My gosh, that's really old. Showing my age. Well, talking about Freenet, that would be showing my age. Whoops. Or my Prodigy email address. Anyway, whoops. I'll be putting that out through Facebook and through Twitter. And Twitter is @ParaNewsInsider. And they're linked together, so don't worry. You got one or the other, you're good. You'll get that. So start those tomorrow, links to all the stories. So if you're not able to be in the chat room listening live, where I do sometimes put these articles out, and now that I'm talking about it, I better do that. People think I'm not a man of my word. So I do try to publish those in the chat room as I go along so that people can bookmark those or follow along. If they're, get bored listening to me talk, they can go and read articles at the time. So I was going to go back here and look at some of this stuff. So what was I going to read here? Planet X. And somebody mentioned Nibiru, however you want to pronounce it. Don't ask a scientist because they'll get mad. Nibiru is make-believe by a lot of people. It's a fictional star, fictional planet, whatever you want to call it, that people claim is coming, heading towards Earth. Now, if it was a star, we would have seen this a long time ago. If it was a planet and it was anywhere near any of the other stars, or I should say planets in our solar system, we would have already seen it. You could see it with the naked eye for as close as some people claim it is. Not really real. Now, Planet X, on the other hand, is the designation that some scientists have given a potential planet that, based on measurements of gravitational pull on existing planets, even our sun, our star at the center, some people aren't the center of the universe or the galaxy or the solar system as they think they are. Yes, Kim Kardashian, I'm calling you out. This planet supposedly is exerting forces, but we've not been able to find it. It's so far away, it's so distant, and it's probably not as big as what we think. But there is a potential Planet X out there, but scientists have not yet found anything about it. So I don't know. I'm holding my breath on that one. Hopefully, we're finding all these other exoplanets. Why can't we find one in our own solar system? I don't get it. I'm just salty about Pluto still. That's all. Anyway, more UFO news here. Live Science. Pretty good series of stories here. LiveScience.com. Pretty good in the obviously in the science arena. Well, they provided an update to a recent search for communication from SETI. And SETI, again, is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So they're trying to discover potential signals from aliens, intelligent life forms out there somewhere. Hopefully there's more than just us. My goodness, I hope so. And they're hoping to get signals, and that would tell us that there's somebody else out there, and we can have open line of dialogue. Invite them over for wine. I don't know what you talk about. But anyway, the Breakthrough Listen Project, which I've already mentioned. So that's SETI's. SETI's has a list of these different breakthrough programs that they're listing. And Breakthrough Listen is where they're, well, obviously, listening for signals. And they conducted a search of 1,327 nearby stars for signals in the 1.1 to 3.45 gigahertz range. And the Green Bank Telescope, lovingly known as the Great Big Thing by some, you get it? Great Big Thing, GBT, get it? Okay, anyway, moving on. And the Parkes Radio Telescope were both used in this project. This chunk of data included 1 petabyte of data. That's a lot of data, a petabyte, which is 1 million gigabytes. I believe that's, yeah, that's correct. 1 million gigabytes. And both radio and optical wavelengths. So the 1,327 stars were all within 160 light years of Earth. Although there were several interesting signals discovered, which kind of prolonged this release, they were ultimately found to be explainable. And some of them near-Earth objects, essentially satellites, which is crazy. So, you know, that's one of the issues about Earth-based satellites is that, unfortunately, most of the cool stuff that we find is caused from our own signals. And I know the Green Bank Telescope, when you reach the city, essentially there are no cell towers. And you're asked to put away your phone because they don't want cell phones and other devices getting messing up this radio telescope, which is interesting stuff. The information was recently published in the Astrophysical Journal and will be available in the Breakthrough Initiatives website at breakthroughinitiatives.org/open data search. But as of yesterday, was empty, was not there. So I don't know who lied, but I'm sure it'll be there soon. Give them a chance. Breakthroughinitiatives.org. And if you go to breakthroughinitiatives.org, they explain all these three different initiatives and how they work and what their goals are. We'll talk about another one here in a second. Breakthrough Listen is basically a 10-year, $100 million project funded by, yes, we mentioned it already, Russian billionaire Yuri Milner, that is aimed at scanning the skies for potential signals from intelligent sources. The project first started back in 2015. So we're running out of time. Hopefully we hear something. So if you're out there listening to the show, aliens, send us a signal. Oh, wait, you're listening to my podcast. Maybe you could send me an email, I suppose, or tweet me. Tweet me something. That'd be kind of cool. Jason Wright, an astrophysicist at Pennsylvania State University who was not involved in the work, stated that the amount of data collected so far for the project equals about a hot tub full of water. I don't know what was on his mind thinking about hot tubs. Full of water compared to the world's oceans. So the world's oceans would represent the amount of data that could potentially take to scan the skies. And we've only collected a hot tub. What's a hot, hot tub? What's the temperature is? If they clean out the hot tub, it's kind of gross. Wright did compliment the release of the data by saying, quote, anyone who thinks the team might have missed something can go over the results and see for themselves, unquote, which is, you know, for scientists to positively acknowledge, you know, what's being done for the search for intelligent life out there with these looking at these signals. I think that's good, because years ago they would have scoffed at this, and they did scoff at this, and they did say it's a waste of valuable resources, it's a waste of telescope time. And I'm being generous on the way they were saying things. They were not very positive about all these things, and now I'm saying that it's pretty good that they're putting the info out there so anybody else can go through it. I mean, then again, years ago, SETI ruined two of my computers with the SETI at Home project, where my computer crunched things in its downtime until it kind of died from crunching things in its downtime. Where now they're able to crunch that data on their own and disseminate that information and look up to see what's going on. And interesting results. But unfortunately, nothing major discovered as of yet. And I'll throw the Breakthrough Initiatives website into the chat room gently. So you can check that out at your leisure whenever you'd like. That, I guess that's the same thing. And there it goes. Watch yourself. So breakthroughinitiatives.org/open data search. Hopefully, I don't know if that's in there today. I didn't check it. But it should be in there for the next few days. So also on the UFO front, a pretty big story. I was pretty surprised to read about this. This is on the front page of CNN. And it was on Fox News. You know, again, I don't know what you listen to. I don't know what your political preferences are. And I don't really care. You do what you got to do. The world's political eyes were on the meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un. It's kind of weird to talk about these guys on the Paranormal News Insider. I feel like I'm doing a political show. Kind of weird. What was really unexpected was that a radar target was sighted in a demilitarized zone, and the target became unidentified. So they found an unidentified flying object during President Donald Trump's visit to North Korea. Well, he's only in North Korea for a minute, but you get it. The object, yes, was unidentified and created a bit of nerves, obviously, because what's going on up there. And ultimately, South Korea decided to scramble some fighter jets to intercept the object to find out what's going on over there. It was initially thought that the object might be a North Korean helicopter, but the object turned out to be a little bit more spooky than that. It was actually a number of objects, scarily enough. That object, or those objects, being a flock of birds. I don't think it was seagulls, but a flock of birds. South Korea had alerted North Korea that they had intended to launch the jets to check out the area, and nothing else came of the matter. That's all. That's it. That's your political UFO political news for tonight, I guess. We'll also talk MUFON, who is celebrating 50 years of existence this month. All kinds of celebrations going on. Kind of interesting. And recently, the subject of an article in space.com. Pretty surprised to see that. I wasn't really sure what direction the article was going to go, since the title was UFOs Remain Elusive Despite Decades of Study. And I figured it was going to kind of tear up MUFON a little bit, space.com being a pretty serious science-based science-based website looking at astrophysics and astronomy and space in general. So for them to acknowledge MUFON and talk about UFOs, I mean, hey, who isn't on the UFO bandwagon right now anyway? It's the biggest topic out there, paranormal or not. UFOs are everywhere. I don't mean it that way. I don't mean go running and looking out the window. That's not what I meant. UFO stories are everywhere. yeah, UFOs remain elusive despite decades of study. I thought it would be a pretty negative story, but it's actually pretty fair. I mean, they do so show some of the shortcomings of MUFON and some of the things that they've not been able to do, and kind of talk about some of the highs and lows, not all the lows, but enough that you kind of get the hint about some of the stuff, and as well as just placing the UFO documentation and investigation area. All in all, it's pretty balanced. I don't think they did, I don't think they were too negative about it. So I think it's pretty fair. It's pretty good. And speaking of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, which is the largest UFO research organization pretty much in the world. They've been around, again, 50 years. They have people in all 50 states and in multiple countries documenting UFO reports. They have just released their June sighting statistics for 2019. At least I think it's June because it says May in the email, but I already got May a while ago. I don't know. We're going to go with June. That's what I think. Now, the big thing, I mentioned this before, the big thing I'm keeping an eye on is whether all this talk about UFOs is going to have an impact on the sighting statistics for UFOs, especially through MUFON. Now, if you've kind of paid attention to World UFO Day releases, it seems like there's literally 100 stories on each state having their own claim to fame, or what states have the highest UFO sightings per capita and all these other things. Most of that's through NUFORC, National UFO Reporting Center, not through MUFON. So MUFON's not really doing it, but they should be getting on this. They should be releasing this stuff to the public, not just people subscribing to a newsletter. Man, they would have had a lot of free press today. I don't know why they didn't do it. They kind of missed out. Swing and a miss. So yeah, lots of stories popping up on sighting statistics today and yesterday and over the weekend, but nothing from MUFON. Really surprised. But anyway, looking at June, and we'll flash back to June of 2018. There was 548 worldwide sightings with 364 in the United States for the month of June of 2018. June of 2017 had 590 total sightings with 421 in the United States. So kind of a drop off last year from the year prior. And June of 2016 had 604 total UFO sightings and 453 in the U.S. So another drop. So going back, you know, you're looking at 604, then 590, and then 548 last year. Where are we at this year? Well, let me hold on. Let me go back to 2015. 2015, the month of June, they had an amazing 1,402 total sightings with 1,180 in the United States. So what happened? I mean, that sounds like an alien invasion. It's a lot of sightings for 1 month. Well, this was the last month of the television show Hangar One on the History Channel. And back then it had a lot of press, a lot of people talking about that show. And they were out there in the spotlight. So a lot of people were watching. A lot of people were talking about their UFO sightings. Doesn't necessarily mean that all those happened in that month. But again, we're looking at these sightings. They've gone down every year. So 1,402, down to 604, down to 590, down to 548. So what do we have this year in the month of June? Well, it's actually pretty good, actually recovered, and is the best it's been since 2015 in the month of June. There was a total of 682 reports, with 473 occurring in the United States. So looking, let's see, last month. So not last month as in June, but last month as in May. 680 reports. So it's pretty close. It's pretty consistent, which is weird. Being, well, both same amount of days, but No, it's shorter one day. But June and July, typically, if you're looking at sighting statistics for the last few years, these are typically the highest months for reports. And I think there's a couple of reasons. One is obviously these are very warm months. Kids are out of school. People are on the streets. They're hanging around doing stuff they shouldn't be doing. But also people are out and about. They're camping. They're backpacking. They're hiking. They're out in the woods. They're out in the wilderness. You also have July 4th when people are craned with their heads up looking in the skies. Lots of sightings. It's also when there's a lot of people parachuting with fireworks on their feet. Yes, that does happen. And people misrepresent that as UFOs. So on and so forth. So back to this last month's reports, June. Of June's 682 reports, again, I mentioned 473 in the United States. Well, Canada was next. They were second with 72. And again, happy belated Canada Day. Didn't get a cake. Sorry. United Kingdom was third. They had 38 sightings. South Korea, that's going to go up next month. They were next with 18. People saw that flock of birds. Germany turned in 7. Australia and France had 6 each. And Ireland, Spain, and Brazil turned in 5 reports each. And there was actually another 25 countries that turned in 4 or less reports, with 14 only turning in 1 report each. Of those countries, with 1, I always like to point this out. I know people get tired of this, but I don't care. Antarctica was on the list. And why is that a big deal? Well, first, they don't have a formal population. But second, generally, the people that are on Antarctica are scientists. And these are people that are sent there to actually document things going on there. So it's pretty cool that somebody reported a UFO. Granted, it's probably a weather balloon, which there's a lot of those floating around down there. But anyway, of the 473 U.S. reports, California topped the list with 48, and they should top the list. They're the number one state in population. It gives them the odds-on favorite for that. New York and Florida were both tied for second with 31 reports each. Ohio had 28. Texas had 25. Pennsylvania had 21. Missouri had 19. Arizona turned in 18. Colorado had 17. Michigan, 16. And New Mexico and North Carolina had 14 each. And Washington and Wisconsin had 12 each. And Oregon and Georgia had 10 reports each. And a little thing I like to do is to look at the per capita report and essentially breaking it down through the sightings. Per 100,000, and you know, then I kind of look at it that way. Now, MUFON used to do that years ago, but they don't do that anymore for whatever reason. I think it's because it turns into fractions, essentially, which is what we have here. But I think it just kind of breaks it down a little bit better. It's easier to kind of figure out who's seeing what. And my goodness, where is New York? Let me see you all in there. Sheesh. Oh, I did say New York. Did I say New York? New York had 31. They were up there at the top. Did I say that? Yeah, New York and Florida tied with 31. I did say that. Okay, good. Thought I was losing my mind. New York had 31 ports. So I do the per capita breakdown. So basically looking at the number of sightings divided by the population, and then multiply that by 100,000, which is the average number used for per capita. Then that gives you essentially a percentage. I wish it gave you a whole number, but it gives you a percentage. So California being number one with 48 sightings, they're number one also in state population. So that's kind of our benchmark. You know, where did California finish? Well, California had a 0.121 per capita. So not even a full person per 100,000. saw like not even a quarter of a person, an eighth of a person, pretty much. So a forearm and a hand of a person saw a UFO. That's always gross when I say it that way. Pennsylvania, number 5 in state population, they had 21 sightings, which equates out to a 0.164 per capita, a little higher than California. So slightly more significant, even though they had less sightings, less than half. The state of Oregon, number 27 in state population, they had a whopping 10 sightings. So not a whole lot, but their per capita was 0.239. So significantly higher, obviously, than California. Arkansas, 33rd in state population numbers. They turned in a 0.265. So more than a quarter of a person. So I guess a left leg and a pinky. I don't know why the pinky. It just sounds like it makes sense. So they had only 8 sightings. But again, with a lower population, that's a little higher per capita. See how this works? It's math. Math is never wrong. Statistics don't lie. Vermont, 49th in state population. It turned a 0.319. But they only had 2 sightings. This is why I think Vermont is one of those states that's mentioned in a lot of these articles about where to go. What states have the highest sightings? They put Vermont up there because the low amount of sightings equates to a higher per capita. So California really and truly should be on the list because they had the most sightings reported. But per capita is actually really, really low. Really, really low. Idaho, 39th in state population, turned in a 0.342 per capita. And they had 6 sightings, which is pretty good. Pretty good. Wyoming, well, they're dead last. State population, 50. 50 out of 50. Got more cows. A lot more buffalo there, too, than people. 0.346. They only had 2 sightings. Yikes. Montana, 43rd in state population. They turned in a 0.377 with 4 sightings. And this month's winner, New Mexico, 36th in state population. They had a whopping 14 sightings. That's pretty impressive. They turned in a 0.668. So a little bit more than one per 200,000 people reported a UFO in New Mexico in the month of June. Now, I don't know. I don't have access anymore to the what do they call that? The CMOS, their data pool there of all these sightings. So I can't really tell you, you know, what the sightings were, what the reports were. I have to try to find somebody that can dig that up for me and find those sightings. It doesn't mean that all those sightings happened in that month, and it could be a lot of those sightings were logical. Like I said, a lot of times people report skydivers with flares on their legs, and that ends up being something that's unfortunately gets turned into that, and they don't take those out. Let's see, Marshall Islands. I don't see Marshall Islands on the list. Hungary is on the list. Colombia, Switzerland, Haiti, Czech Republic, all those had 1. Puerto Rico had 2. It's pretty cool. Norway had 3. It's pretty cool. Ireland had 5. It's pretty interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. So anybody listening to the show, thank you for your UFO sightings out there. But yeah, we keep moving forward. And it's, I'm a little let down by this. I thought that MUFON sightings would go up because of all this talk about UFOs. But I just don't know if MUFON's putting themselves out there enough, you know, in the public spotlight of talking about these sightings and getting their cases out there like they have in the past. I think they're missing. They're really missing the boat. And you know, MUFON is a business. It's a company. They operate with people. people paying dues and people participating in research and investigations of these cases. And I know that they want, not that I agree with this, but it seems like they want quantity. I don't want to say over quality, but maybe it's, you know, quantity, period. Because the more people you have, the more money you can generate and the more things you can do. But personally, I'd rather have quality over quantity. So people would take things seriously. And I think, you know, that's what the To the Stars Academy is trying to do. And, you know, New Fork isn't a large organization either, but they're getting tons of press about all this stuff. So I don't know. I don't know. So we'll shift gears. Shift gears to ghost news real quick. And I was kind of surprised. I do get a lot of emails from producers on a few lists for production companies all over the world, really. I get stuff from all over the place because of my involvement in the paranormal, and I've talked to producers about TV shows. Not that I'm ever going to sell out, don't worry. I won't do a TV show unless there's lots and lots of money involved. Lots and lots and lots of money involved. And then I could sell my soul for a TV show. Probably won't happen. But I did receive an official press release from the A&E Network. It was official. It had a logo and everything. Announcing that they will be relaunching a trio. And that's three for some of you that don't know what a trio is. Of ghost-based programs, including Psychic Kids and Celebrity Ghost Stories. Two pretty cool shows. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of either one of those. We'll see. We'll see if they change anything. But the big announcement, no, it wasn't Psychic Kids. It was that the fact that they're bringing back, wait for it, yes, the original, the OG, the Ghost Hunters TV show is back on A&E. No more sci-fi. And they're bringing Grant Wilson back, and he's creating a whole new team. It's got more in the tank. The network also announced a new original series, Trey the Texas Medium, as well as an upcoming two-hour special, The World's Biggest Ghost Hunt, to their lineup. Ghost Hunters will return on Wednesday, August 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And in the press release, A&E said of the new series, quote, "The series that terrified and captivated fans for 11 seasons will follow one of the original team leaders, Grant Wilson, and his hand-picked group of professional ghost hunters as they use their decades of field experience to investigate hauntings across the country, engaging forensic experts, historical records, and the most innovative technology available. The new squad will help everyday people who are struggling with unexplained supernatural phenomena. The team is committed to discovering the truth to give relief to those plagued by paranormal activity and will follow the evidence they uncover wherever it may lead," unquote. I think they stole that from me. I know I've used that line in a lot of my presentations, but that's okay. That's okay. So a couple of things I'm concerned about, one of which is the big thing that I saw was this new technology. And a lot of people are getting all excited about this. Ooh, new technology. Technology doesn't find ghosts. Ghosts are not found by tech. If that was true, ghosts would have been discovered and more than likely exploited a long time ago. I've been saying this for a long time, over a decade. Technology does not equate to finding ghosts. It just doesn't. It just doesn't add up. Not something that I believe in. Now, tech, I do believe that tech can help you discover logical solutions to some of these things, and it should be used for that, especially EMF detectors, not ghost detectors. They're EMF detectors. If EMF detectors detected ghosts, we would have validated ghosts a long time ago. Now, there are some people that swear by these, and for me, I swear at them. You know, to each his own. You know, I prefer observation and documentation. Haunted objects. Sure. Absolutely. I believe haunted objects exist. So Ghost Hunters is it's going to be greenlit for 20 episodes for season one. So that means greenlit means that go ahead. They're going to film 20, and they're already filming them because I've heard people talking the last few weeks about people seeing Grant and his team out there filming already. Shame on you for spoiling it. Psychic Kids will follow Ghost Hunters on Wednesdays, and we'll get 8 episodes where they're going to revisit kids from the past, so past episodes, to get updates on where they're at right now. A&E also states that Trade, the Texas Medium, will debut in the fall with 12 episodes, and Celebrity Ghost Stories will feature 6 episodes and will debut sometime this fall as well. And I do want to talk about one quick story. I just want to mention this before. I don't want to save it for next week because I already got 2 or 3 stories piling up for next week. But speaking of piling up, I'm not sure if you heard about this. This is the other news section of the Paranormal News Insider. Traditionally, I've set aside the other news for, it used to be called Strange Earth News. And I kind of got rid of that moniker because there's a lot of other things that we've talked about in this segment. But sky noise being one of those big things, that strange Earth things. And we've also talked about exoplanet discovery. So that's kind of bent the definition. So I kind of gave up strange Earth many, many years ago to just call it other news. But now it seems that strange weather is in the news. I don't think I've ever talked about strange weather in the paranormal news, but this is pretty out there. It's not quite paranormal, but it's pretty scary. I don't know what I would do if this happened where I live. I'd probably cry extensively. Guadalajara, Mexico. Not sure if you've heard about this. They've been having temperatures the last few days, the low to mid 80s. They've had a few days of touching 90s, but recently, the last 5 or 6 days, right around mid 80s. And along with that, plenty of thunderstorms to go with the hot weather, just like here where I'm at in Ohio. Now, on Sunday, a freak hailstorm filled the streets. Yes, filled the streets with up to 5 feet of ice. Cars were swept into piles, and some of them were buried in the ice from this thunderstorm. Over 200 homes and businesses reported damage, and the army, yes, the Mexican army, was sent in to help clear the streets, although luckily no deaths or injuries were reported. So nobody got injured, nobody got killed. Luckily, the storm happening there on the weekend, on a Sunday, early morning, hopefully prevented that from happening. And videos, some amazing videos from this. A lot of videos all over the internet showing this. These trucks moving through the icy sludge, 3 to 5 feet, 3-4 feet in the icy sludge, trying to power their way through this. It's amazing. You know, the temperatures were in the 60s, 70s at that time. And it started to melt the ice into it. It's kind of like, it's a snowy soup, is what I would call it. And a lot of people were freaked out about this, but hailstorms are actually pretty common in this area due to the elevation. I think it's about 5,000 feet up. But nothing of this magnitude has ever been documented. And the amount of hail isn't just from a giant storm, but it actually, the way it happened in this area, accumulated in a low area. So it was bouncing off of buildings, it was running down hills. It's kind of like a flood, essentially, making it appear as though all this ice fell at once. Well, it happened over a long period of time. The area of this hail kind of actually stalled out over this part of Guadalajara, so it fell for quite a long time. Usually when you get hail, it lasts a few seconds, maybe a minute or so, and then it moves on. But this one just kind of parked itself over this area, as well as just kind of pooling in the area, similar to like a flash flood. So think about it, a flash flood occurring with hail. That's what happened here in Guadalajara, Mexico, which is northwest of Mexico City, and is the second largest city in Mexico. Really scary, and definitely check this out. Check out photos of this. It was all over the place. New York Post, Fox News, I know it sounds like I read Fox News, but I don't. Trust me. It's just a link that I saw. Not saying my political affiliations or anything like that, but definitely check this out. And if you aren't in the chat room, you're not listening live, don't worry. I'm going to be putting that out throughout the week. And you'll be able to see these amazing pictures and amazing videos. But in the interim, so I want to wish everyone an early happy 4th of July here in the United States. And party safe, party hard. Remember what we're celebrating and why we're free. Don't forget about that. And have a hot dog, man. Have a hot dog. Careful with the fireworks. Don't burn off any fingers. And watch your eye. And watch for skydivers as well. So I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. Don't let your brains fall out. Above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.